All right, so we just fucking jump right into it like it's a portal to another world. I'm like, you gotta save a bestie.
Well, I'm not doing that. That's too much work. It was nice knowing them. I'll say something nice at their funeral, okay?
Hello, and welcome to My Streaming Bubble, the podcast where I talk about the shows I love with the people I tolerate. I'm your host, Jen, and back in the bubble to cross the streams, and because it makes them feel good to bust another remake, reboot, reimagining, is the keymaster to my gatekeeper, Dozer. And since we ain't afraid of no ghosts, we're taking on all the Ghostbusters from 1984 to 2021. Dozer, are you there or is it only Zool?
If there's a state paycheck in it, I'll believe anything you say.
Awesome. Oh, how are you, Dozer? How you doing?
Well, like I said, I woke up a little earlier today and I stayed up really late last night trying to get all the information and stuff I wanted. So I'm a little tired, but no worse for the wear.
Yeah.
How about you?
Oh, not too bad. Summer vacation has officially started, so the kids are always here. So there's that. Take that how you want.
I don't.
But not too bad. We're kind of just being lazy these first couple of days, and then we'll try and start getting into a small summer routine so we don't get too lazy. So we'll see how long that lasts. Other than that, things are good. I'm very excited for today's recording. I didn't think I was gonna be, but after I got in the watches that I needed to, I'm pretty pumped for this. So we'll go ahead and we'll get right into it. So, like I said, we are covering the Ghostbusters, and that includes Ghostbusters 1 and 2 from 1984 and 1989. Ghostbusters from 2020, or I'm sorry, Ghostbusters from 2016 with the all-female cast, and Ghostbuster Afterlife with, and that's 2021, and that one is the one that with Paul Rudd and Finn Wolfhard, one of the kids from Stranger Things. Let's see, Ghostbusters 1 and 2 are available for rent on various streaming services. It's also included with some subscription-based streaming services. It's on Plex and free at your local library. 2016 is rentable on various streaming services or free at your library. And Afterlife, rentable on streamers, included with subscription streamers, available on Plex, and of course, free at your library. So, now that we got that out of the way, we'll go ahead and move on to the spoiler warning slash brief synopsis for the four movies. So, what IMDb says about Ghostbusters, the first one from 1984, three parapsychologists forced out of their own university funding set up shop as a unique ghost removal service in New York City, attracting frightened yet skeptical customers. Ghostbusters 2, the discovery of a massive river of ectoplasm and a resurgence of spectral activity allows the staff of Ghostbusters to revive the business. 2016, following a ghost invasion of Manhattan, paranormal enthusiasts Aaron Gilbert and Abby Yates, nuclear engineer Jillian Holtzman, and subway worker Patty Tolan band together to stop the otherworldly threat. And for Ghostbusters Afterlife, when a single mom and her two kids arrive in a small town, they begin to discover their connection to the original Ghostbusters and the secret legacy their grandfather left behind. So all I'm going to say is we came, we saw, we kicked its ass, because I'm like, I don't know how I can lump in all four in a quick little bite. So that's all I got. Anyway.
It was pretty good.
All right. Thank you. Short and sweet. So since this is a original versus remake episode, we'll go ahead and quickly establish what is considered a remake, reboot, reimagining based on a Vox article from 2015, because as I've said, that was the first thing to pop up when I Googled it. So a remake loosely recreates one particular film. Reboot resets the continuity of an established film series, and reimagining remakes with at least one big change. All right. So with that in mind, Dozer, what are your general thoughts on these four movies?
how do I want to do this? The first one, instant classic. I saw a video about, I think it was Jason Reitman. He was interviewed and he had said that when VHSs were first coming out and all that, you know, some, because they were still expensive and all that, but one of the three movies every home had was Ghostbusters. So it was a huge, huge deal. And if you haven't seen it, you really need to. I don't know where the hell you've been, but it's literally one of the greatest movies you will ever find, just bar none. As you get, like everything else, the second one, it was okay. It tried to just cookie cutter the first one. Wasn't all that good, but not terrible. Still worth a watch. The reimagining, the 2016, I would take a pass at it. Just, you know, if you don't got the time, you ain't got the time. And I kind of want to hold off on my thoughts on Afterlife, because I was watching a video today about how Afterlife would be considered also a reboot in some sense. So I don't know if we want to kind of do that.
All right. Because, well, we'll argue about that later.
Okay.
Now the listeners know they have something to look forward to.
What did you think about the four movies?
Well, I mean, I agree on 84 and 89. 84 is an instant classic. I grew up watching both of these movies like all the time. So I'm very, very familiar with both of them. Grew up watching a lot of fond childhood memories associated with it. Still a lot of fun to watch. I managed to get in the first one as a rewatch this morning, and I still love it. It's still a lot of fun. I still remember a lot of the lines and the scenes, and it's just, there's a lot of sentimental and nostalgia attached to it. So I don't know that I could ever not like that movie. Kind of feel the same way about 89. It's okay. I still watched it a shitload because it was just on, like I said. But it was, there were some things I didn't really care for. I didn't really care for the change in like Janine Meltzer, just her kind of look and everything, and then going for Lewis and giving up her pursuit on Egon. I mean, they're a cute little couple and everything, but I still was just like, eh. But other than that, it was, I mean, there were still a few parts in the second one that scared the shit out of me. Most notably the ghost train that, yeah, Winston sees. And then, because there's heads on pikes and everything, that shit fucking terrified me more than Viggo the Carpathian. 2016. So I saw a little bit of this years ago, and the little bit that I saw, I was not impressed. So I actually went into this movie thinking, this isn't going to be good. I'm not going to care for it, which is disappointing because I like all these actors. I got like halfway through it and I'm just like, you know what? I'm having a good time. There are some really hilarious bits. I feel like there's a lot of ad-libbing happening, because a lot of these actors are really good at ad-libbing and improv and everything. You kind of get the sense that all the actors were having a lot of fun. So I think that comes through a lot, which kind of helps me enjoy the movie as well. The overall plot, whatever. But I think this movie gets a lot of unjust hate. And I do think that it's all misogynistic, just whiny men's rights activist crybabies. You ruined my childhood. And then 2021, Afterlife. I did not expect to feel all the fucking feels with that one. Holy shit. So I loved that. That one was really centered around Egon and kind of bringing in the original, at least the first movie, into it with the family and everything. So it was just, I thought the Egon bits were done very well, and no major complaints with that. I really liked kind of that they added that heart to it. And then Paul Rudd is the comedic relief. I mean, he's just hilarious and handsome. So how can you not like it? But Yeah, I enjoyed 2021. I watched that with my oldest. He really liked it too. So it's clearly, you know, good for kids, good for family members or families. So
has
yeah.
He see, but did he see any of the other ones though as well too?
Let's see. He has seen bits and pieces of the first one. I don't think he has seen any of the second one, and I'm not sure about the 2016.
Because I find that kind of interesting that if he hadn't seen the original 84, that he still liked it, then he should be able to understand it. Well, he wouldn't know that it would be a reboot necessarily, but he would like the story in the effects and stuff too. So it's one of those ones that maybe it even could have been its own standalone and been just a reboot in and of itself.
I think it could work. I feel like you don't need to be familiar with the first two movies to enjoy Afterlife. Obviously, it helps with all the nods and the costumes, and even the ghost trap is like the original ghost trap, whereas in 2016, it's a completely different trap style. So I feel like there's enough there for younger audiences to enjoy without needing to see the first two. I think for us as being older and growing up with the first two movies, we can appreciate all those little nods and homages and kind of nudge, nudge, wink, winks to the first two. So, and kind of as we were watching it, I'm dropping little bits like, oh, and then in the first one, this happened. So that's what this is a comment to or a reference of, blah, blah, blah. So he was just kind of like, oh, cool. So I was just a talking IMDb for him while we were watching it.
Because that's always fun when you're trying to watch a movie for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the best.
And so in one of the things I saw, Jason Reitman, the director of the 2021, he specifically said he wanted this to be, what's the word I'm looking for? He wanted it to be paying homage to the first one, like, bam, bam, bam. Like all the Easter eggs and references were always there. They were one after another. He wanted to really do what the first one did. So It, like I said, it kind of almost feels like it's a remake slash reboot in some way.
See, and I just see it as more of a sequel to at least the first one, because I didn't really catch a lot of references to the second one. It almost seemed like they kind of stepped over Ghostbusters 2. The only thing I picked up in Afterlife that seemed like it could be a reference to Ghostbusters 2 was when Phoebe calls Ray and he talks about how business slowed down and they all kind of went their separate ways, because Ghostbusters 2 starts out as, you know, they've been sued and Ray and Winston have to do birthday parties and all this other bullshit. Jason
I Rittman. Thought it was going to be He-Man.
Yeah. And Jason Rittman is the kid that's like, you guys are crap. And my dad says you guys are crap, which I love that. That's such a fun little like fun fact, which I don't think I would have known had I not done the research for all four movies. But yeah, so in my opinion, 2021 is a sequel because they're bringing back original actors as the characters. I mean, we get them all from the original Ghostbusters. They even bring back Annie Potts' character, Janine Meltzer. They had a part for Rick Moranis, but he declined because he wasn't interested in doing a cameo part. And you know what? I love Rick Moranis. I respect his decision and why he left Hollywood and everything. But hopefully he knows that he is loved and missed and will hopefully come back and do something. I think he was... Anyways... I did see he did like a commercial with Ryan Reynolds for his aviation gin. And I think that was the last more recent thing that I've seen Rick Moranis in. Because, you know, they're both Canadians.
What's that all about? So when you say that Rick Moranis wasn't in it, so they originally contacted him, and this was years ago, even before the 2016. It might have even been 2008 or 2009. The whole thing is to get into the how 2016 kind of came about was once Ghostbusters 2, which came out in 89, right? Mm-hmm. Or is it 91?
89.
89. Okay. Bill Murray originally said it was he hated it, absolutely hated it. And for the longest time, from 89, I want to say, I didn't write it down exactly, but Bill Murray wanted nothing to do with another script at all. And then I think it was 10 years later, something like that, and he had said the wounds of Ghostbusters 2 have finally healed. So he was kind of open to it, but not really. And so from the early 2000s all the way up until Harold Ramis's death, there were scripts thrown at Bill Murray all like constantly. And apparently one of the rumors is that he sent one of the scripts back to Dan Aykroyd all torn up.
Oh.
So, and Bill Murray had been doing appearances dressed as a Ghostbuster, not slamming the door saying no at some of the conventions, but not saying he's into it. So what wound up happening is there were all these scripts being thrown at Bill Murray. And while they did ask, all the original cast, Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis included, Rick Moranis had said that I'm willing to listen, but what script do you got? When is the time frame? How long are we looking at shooting and all this? And they had no answers for. And so he just kind of threw his hands up in the air and said, look, until you guys get me some actual information, don't even bother.
Fair enough.
That's how kind of how that happened. Now, having said that, after Harold Ramis died so quickly, we finally get another new Ghostbusters. But it's not the one we wanted. And what really pisses me off is they wasted all that time between 89 to 2016 where you could have had a third one, which technically they did, but you have the passing of Harold Ramis, and now all of a sudden it gets done. Like, that is just complete disrespect as far as I'm concerned. So my downgrading of the 2016 is because of all that other crap that happened. I thought 2016 was okay on its own. But once you start digging into some of this other stuff that happened behind the scenes and all that, it really, you really go into it with a sour feeling right off the bat. And because it wasn't as good as hoped for, it really kind of takes it down for me.
Gotcha. See, and I knew that there was always kind of a Ghostbusters 3 script that, like, I think Harold and Ivan kind of were working on, tinkering with a bit here and there. Like finalized all three of them. Oh yeah, and Jason, Ivan's son.
No, it was Ivan, Harold, and Dan Aykroyd. He was also writing the script as well too.
Well, and then there's the whole thing with Harold and Bill Murray had a big, you know, falling out kind of thing, and apparently didn't make amends until, like, basically on Harold's deathbed. So I'm sure that had a big part of it, was a big factor in it as well. So for 2016, I really thought, because the little bit that I saw, I was like, I don't like these special effects. They don't look that great. Not having seen like the first three-fourths of the movie, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? You know, it's just New York all smoky and ghosts shooting out everywhere. But when I sat down and watched it, and then not knowing any of that other dramatics behind the scenes, I was like, I think as a standalone movie, this works just fine as a reboot, reimagining, what have you. But if you try to lump it in with the other three movies, it almost just feels like an alternate universe where the original all-male Ghostbusters didn't exist, and now here's the women taking up the mantle, and they're the ones to save Manhattan. And I think that's fine, because I think I saw a little something about one of the ideas for Ghostbusters 3 that the OGs were working on involved an alternate reality or an alternate universe. So kind of knowing that after the fact, I'm like, all right, I can get behind this being an alternate reality kind of Ghostbusters thing. because you have the same actors coming in but doing cameos as completely different people. Which, I mean, that's fine. It makes it fun. But then in 2021, they're coming back as themselves. So I don't think 2016 deserves all the hate that it gets.
So going back to the alternate dimension kind of thing, when I say that they sort of made a third movie, that's where the video game comes in.
So do you want to tell?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, do you want to let us know about the video game? Because I did not get a chance to play it or look into it or anything at all. So take it away, Dozer.
I will. All right. This may be a little bit long because there's, like I said, so I've already kind of prefaced it saying that after the 89 Ghostbusters 2, you know, they still wanted to do a third one. I don't know if it was ever in anybody's idea to do a trilogy of any sort, but it was kind of being the thing done at the time anyway. So, and plus Ghostbusters 2 hadn't flopped, but it wasn't great. I mean, critics didn't care for it, but the fans appreciated it. They didn't love it, but they appreciated it. So there was still some clamoring for Ghostbusters as a third one. Like I said, with all the different scripts that came out, one that really kind of hit was one where Manhattan either gets sucked in, or New York gets either sucked into a hell dimension, or a hell dimension kind of bleeds into to Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And one of the other stipulations for and I think this was back in, the game came out, was 2009. And so I think the original script, and I forget it, I think they call it Helen or whatever, Manhattan, but Man-Hell. Mm-hmm. And Bill Murray was actually, I apparently kind of liked the script, but he didn't want to play the same old Dr. Venkman. He wanted to actually die and play a ghost in the movie. And at that time, I think that at that time he had already done a lot of voice acting for the Garfield movies and other stuff that he had been doing before this game came out. So that's kind of what he was more into.
Sure.
Well,
Garfield, Jesus.
when they still couldn't get any backing or anything like that, and they weren't able to get a movie script out, some developer, a video game developer said, well, we're interested in making a game. How do you guys want to do this? And Dan Aykroyd had said, well, since we can't make the movie and Bill's kind of just being stubborn, let's just do the video game. He gets to do the voice acting and still play the part. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the video game kind of came about there. And the game's really good, actually, and the story's really good. To make a long story short, this is another reason why I don't really necessarily care for Afterlife, because the script and all that for the game itself was written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis. I believe, no, I'm looking here. There was a few others, but not Ivan Reitman. But it was one of the last things that Harold Ramis did. And so they continued on with the lore of Ghostbusters 1 and 2. And they kind of put an end to the whole Shandor Gozer thing.
Oh, okay.
And so to see 2021 kind of ignore that lore, kind of, once again, now you're shitting all over Harold Ramis's work yet again. Hmm. And so that's kind of how that went. So there technically is a third movie script out, and it's just playable in a different format. That's all.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. So yeah, I think I saw a little bit about, yeah, the Ghostbusters 3 script being worked into the video game. But since I didn't have time for the video game, and I was like, I'd already told you, you know what, you do you with the game. I was like, I'll let Dozer handle all of that. So, well, that kind of sucks that, like, knowing that kind of sullies 2021 for you. So what are your overall thoughts on 2021? We'll start with recent and work backwards. How's that?
I think that might be a little better.
Okay.
Like I said, knowing that, Well, I kind of knew going in that the video game was the third one, so I was kind of interested to see how they were going to redo. I figured at first 2021 was just going to be another reboot. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't necessarily know going in. Well, I guess I did because I waited so long to watch it. So I knew that the original guys were still around and what the premise was because I saw the spoilers.
Ah.
So it kind of sold me on that just even before I sat down to watch it. I'm sorry, but anytime you have kids as the protagonist, forget it. I'm already not interested.
Oh, no.
The goddamn proton pack weighs, if not as much, more than that little girl. And she's wielding that thing. Come on, shut the hell up.
All right, I know. And okay, so in that respect, when it comes to the 2016 and the proton packs, here were my issues with it. One, they already make a comment. Melissa McCarthy makes a comment about how heavy they were, which is kind of a nod to how heavy the packs were for the original four. And then they're so agile with these packs on. And the other thing that I kind of took issue with was I was confused on what the proton packs and the streams were actually doing in 2016. Because in all the other ones, even 2020, it basically holds the ghost until they can get the trap under it and capture the ghost that way. Whereas in 2016, it seemed like they were able to like poof them, zap them away and kind of clear out their little, that little smoky area where they have their awesome fight scene. And I love Kate McKinnon. I loved Holtzman. I thought Holtzman was fucking hilarious. Just her delivery and everything. And her new toys, her little guns that she like licks the one and then goes off, and utterly ridiculous, but a lot of fun to watch. Cause I'm like, there's no fucking way that any of this is happening. Even in this supernatural science fiction story, I was like, I think my biggest issue was with 2016 was the proton packs, how they were being utilized. But in my mind, it's an alternate universe, so they're a little different, and that's okay.
So if you'd have played the video game, they explain why some of the ghosts dissipate instead of having to be captured.
Oh. Well, are you going to tell us, or?
I don't remember. I think it had something to do with it being like, because they weren't full apparitions or something like that, they could just be dissipated back to wherever they were real quick. They weren't fully here, but they're still kind of here, from what I understand. Or it's a subset of a bigger aberration, and it can't sustain outside of its host for very long.
And that second explanation would make sense for 2016, since mm-hmm. these were all being unleashed by possessed Kevin.
Chris, what a terrifying name, by the way.
Oh my god, I loved Chris Hemsworth in this. He was utterly hilarious. I think he is incredibly funny, which we don't really get to see, like in the first Thor movie. We don't really see that until Ragnarok, how hilarious he is. And then kind of seeing some different stuff from the from like Melissa McCarthy, Leslie Jones, and the other ones whose names I completely blanked out on. Even they have mentioned how hilarious he was. And there's a note in IMDb that that Chris Hemsworth was a little nervous during like the interview scene, going up against three very, very good, very funny comedians and improvers. I don't know what's wrong with my words. But he did such a good job. So the note is, Chris Hemsworth was concerned having to face off against three women for the interview scene, as he doesn't consider himself much of an improviser. Improviser, that's the word. But when the time came, he improvised the bit with the lens-free glasses and the mic hat line, among others, which that whole scene, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was hilarious. And then shortly after, I think he has a line that he calls... an aquarium is a submarine for fish. And that one took a second to settle in, but then I could not stop laughing. And I was like, that line has no right being that funny. So yeah, like I said, there were some parts in it that really, really, really just had me rolling.
So I think we discussed this on a few of our reviews, is that, and because you mentioned it and it made me just think of that. I didn't think about it when I was watching it, that like some inanimate objects in other horror movies or remakes or movies in general, that some of those, like the vehicles, like we talked about the Batmobile, the mm-hmm. gun in Judge Dredd, mm-hmm. do you suppose the proton pack was also one of those things where just don't mess with it? It's its own identity. And you said that because of the way it looked and the way some of that stuff handled, like it just didn't seem quite right. Do you feel that was part of it?
I think that was a part of it. I mean, it's not enough for me to like hate the movie, but it was just, unless I missed it, there could have been a line about kind of explaining how the proton packs and the proton glove were effective on these partial apparitions or what have you. They still, the look of them was fine. That didn't change a whole hell of a lot. The trap was definitely different, which I was like, okay, I'll allow it because I'm not going to let one tiny little detail like that kind of ruin it. But using the proton streams as like whips and everything, that definitely took me out. I'm glad it's kind of a, there's an explanation in the video game, which just feels like a bonus tie-in.
Well, they also do that in the video game as well too. They use them, they can use their protons as whips as well too, like for the ghosts.
And I'm trying to remember, because I used to watch the animated series back in the 90s. And so I'm just kind of, and I don't really remember anything from it other than it existed and it was funny and I liked it. But I'm like, I wonder if they ever did anything like that in the animated series too, where the proton packs have kind of evolved, upgraded, or that explanation is given. I don't know.
Well, that would have been too long ago. I love the show myself too, but
I have no clue. Yeah.
What did you think of the story in and of itself for 2021?
Well, like I said, I liked that it surrounded it all kind of orbited Egon and his family. And I thought that was a really great way to honor the actor and the character. So, and it totally got, you know, a fucking ugly crying blubber cry at the end. I was just like not expecting a Harold Ramis apparition, and I'm glad they didn't have him talk or anything. And this is one way to bring back a deceased actor to fulfill kind of a role without ruining anything. So I did like that. This bit about now Egon has a daughter, they're estranged, you know, because Egon goes and does Egon things out in the middle of nowhere and just basically kind of leaves everyone behind so he can stand guard and save the world. So I liked it. I'll let it go, because I kind of, like I said, just that inclusion of Egon and then getting at a little bit with the original characters and kind of how they all went their separate ways. Seeing Winston as this successful businessman and Ray back in Ray's occult bookstore, and then we find out Winston's been paying the bookstore's rent. There was a nice sense of like family, obviously, because it's surrounding the Egon's family. So I liked it. I think it had heart. It was funny. I didn't mind the kids. I liked Phoebe, and I liked Podcast.
Of course.
I'm gonna have a soft spot for the little Asian kid that has the podcast.
I kind of figured as much.
So yeah, like I said, I wasn't expecting as much heart in this movie, and they gave it to us, and I thought it was done really well and a nice nice kind of send off, especially one of those final scenes where Ghost Egon floats up to the stars in the night sky, and then the thing pops up on the screen for Harold. I was just like, stop it. I don't have any tissues near me. Snotting into my sleeve, and that's gross.
See, and that's all it felt for me, is that this was just a way just to put out a movie and hopefully make it a hit with the older crowd that remembers. It was just nostalgia after nostalgia after nostalgia. And to me, and Jason Reitman even said that was the whole point of the movie. They didn't really want to introduce a whole lot new. They didn't really want to go outside of anything. They just wanted to admit nostalgia, nostalgia, nostalgia. And to me, that's like, fine. But
it feels more like a cash grab than trying to really.
I would say, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like that they try to maybe fix all the wrongs that maybe they bestowed, not that they necessarily were trying to put on Harold Ramis during his last years, but it's just like, I know what you're trying to do. And so it kind of takes away from it for me, especially knowing some of the other history and stuff like that. So it's just like, this is a day late and a dollar short, as far as I'm concerned.
See, I feel like this is an instance where ignorance is bliss, because I didn't know any of that. So it was, it was like the nods, the homages, the Easter eggs to the original two in Afterlife felt more natural, and like they still fit without needing to know the first two movies. Whereas in 2016, I also appreciate all the homages, nods, and Easter eggs, but it was almost like too much, or like too obvious. I don't know. I liked how Afterlife did it more than 2016, which is sometimes referred to as Ghostbusters Answer the Call. But because 2016 had a lot, and which is fine, but it just felt kind of more like cheeky rather than substantial and meaning. Like they're just kind of throwing them in, like you said, like how you feel about 2021 and those Easter eggs and homages is how I feel about the ones that were all in 2016. Just there to kind of grab the older audience and be like, see, we're mentioning the first two. We're, you know, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Look, there's Dan Aykroyd, and look, there's Bill Murray, and trying to get us to like it and appreciate based off of those bits. And it was just, I don't know, it was too much, or it just felt a little forced. I'm not sure. It just didn't land right. 2021, I felt like, did it better.
And then I in doing my research, I came across an article, or not an article, but a comment in some of the articles and videos I was watching, that somebody tried to do the timeline for this. Mm-hmm. And somebody had mentioned that if we can assume somebody's age relatively close, in 1984, Egon would have already had a daughter at mm-hmm. that point, which is never mentioned in one or two, by the way, nor in the video game. So I kind of wonder, like, did they kind of screw that up and not think that through very well?
The way I was able to kind of explain it away and not be hung up on it too much, because I saw that as well, where I was like, well, what the fuck? And he just straight up abandons his family in 84 and in 89. But I mean, he does. He abandons his family. And so I felt like that's how they explained the no mention of his daughter in the first two. When the daughter finds... gets to the house and everything and finds all of his like his collection of spores, molds, and funguses, you know, there's all the pictures of her kind of growing up and this and that, as like he's been keeping tabs on her, but apparently no photo of a mother, no mention of a mother whatsoever. So that kind of makes it even more curious then, So it's like, I guess you could just kind of make up your own. You could do like a little fanfic about it, what Egon was like as a young degenerate father and bailing out on his daughter. Who's watching the daughter? What happened to the mother? These aren't questions I need answered, but I feel like it could leave that open for fans to get creative, like I said, with their fanfics and whatnots.
Well, see, stuff like that kind of, because I'm a stickler for goddamn detail.
I know.
and so I have that nagging at me. And what else was I going to say? I had it. Come on, brain, work with me. I just had it. Oh, it also kind of just felt like this one, the 2021, was just because it's almost the exact same story as 84. It's Gozer and the Keymaster, Gatekeeper, all that. I don't know. If I wanted to watch 2021, I'll just pop in 84. It's almost the exact same movie, just better, as far as I'm concerned.
Sure. And that was kind of, I guess, one thing about 2021 was really we're bringing back the original villain. Yeah, with Gozer and Zool and Vin, whatever. So that felt a little lazy that they couldn't come up with something better or something new or just even a little different. Because as I'm watching it, I'm like, there's got to be another baddie behind Gozer, because we're really not going up against the same thing again.
Well, and that's what the video game did is it pretty much takes off right after Ghostbusters 2. They do reference it in the video game, not as much, but they do. And so they do fight Gozer and the State Puff in the video game again, but that's early in the game. So now the thing is now you're trying to figure out what Shandor was trying, Ivo mm-hmm. Shandor,
yeah,
what he was trying to do. So you break up his plans and then you fight him at the end. So that's how they could have did it.
Yes.
And they just straight up didn't. I don't know for what reason. I mean, all the things were there for him too. I kind of feel like the 2021 should have just did what the video game did. Mm-hmm. And you probably would have had a way better storyline. Although it doesn't fix the Harold Ramis thing. Like, where the hell is he now in this? Sure. But that's something that you could do something different with. Okay, this is what I was trying to think of. This is another thing that always pisses me off in a movie. So you've got Egon. He ditches everybody. He steals all this equipment because he's saying the world's going to end in this, and we got to stop it. And you mean to tell me Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, at least those three, or I don't know, anybody else in New York at that time, like, you've just seen ghosts and supernatural crap. You have just seen it. Hell, most of them have interacted with it. And so you've got Egon doing all this other stuff, and he's like, hey, we gotta fix this. This will be a problem. And nobody believes him. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't take the 5 minutes to be like, maybe there's something to this. Like, they all of a sudden just shit on him.
Yeah. I feel like, I feel like you can kind of rationalize, explain away Peter Venkman's, him not being involved in it, and even Winston not being involved in it and wanting to maybe walk away and start their own thing. The one that surprised me the most that didn't believe Egon was Ray. He's got the fucking occult bookstore. He is the one. He should have been the one out being crazy pants in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So that one, yeah, did not. I didn't care for that little piece. And it's like, yeah, they could have done a little bit better of a job with that, where maybe Ray was like a part-time partner working with Egon, and then for whatever, and then find a maybe different, better reason to explain why he decides to bail on him. Well, I don't know.
I was going to say, you could write it off then as Egon at the time when he starts to cut ties, his explanation is this is way too dangerous and I don't want to endanger them and something like that. So that you could have thrown it away like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to use the word phrase thrown away, but this also just reminds me that when the scripts were coming out from 2000 to 2009, that Bill Murray wanted to be the ghost and not have mm-hmm. to act. Well, apparently Harold Ramis beat him to the punch. So too soon, I don't know, but.
Well, I do like that Harold's daughter signed off on all the inclusion of Egon, the kind of the CGI bits and everything. So it's always nice to know that at least they got the family permission, the family's blessing kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
versus just moving forward and doing whatever the hell they want without any consideration for any surviving family members and how they're going to portray that legacy and that character. So,
well, they just pulled a Weird Al, that's all. Because he always contacts the artist first to say, is it okay that I do this?
Yeah.
And if they say yes, he goes for it. But if they say no, he doesn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so, that's pretty simple. Just ask.
Other than that, I don't have a whole lot more than that to say about the 2021. I thought the cast was okay. I like the effects. They really, that was one thing Jason Reitman said, is they don't want to overuse CG. And I think they, the effects were right on par. There was enough practical effects that really got it done. And they splashed in this CGI when they had to. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah, no, I agree. Including more practical effects is always, like we've discussed many times, it's always much better.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. The last couple of things I have for 2021. First of all, I love Phoebe's jokes. I don't care. They are hilarious.
Well, I gotta go.
I loved the itty bitty little Stay Puffs. And when they first start coming alive in the Walmart and then they're like grilling themselves and melting chalk, like that shit was dark and it was hilarious.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I'll give you that. I did enjoy that scene.
And then when the original Ghostbusters show up and they're facing off with Gozer again, and once again, kind of almost like they remembered and asked Ray again, are you a god? I'm sitting there screaming, you better fucking say yes. And I loved that he did. And that even Winston and Peter were just like, don't fuck it up again. So I appreciated that. And then I liked at the end where it's Winston and Janine and they're kind of sitting there having a little chit chat. And that's how we find out that Winston's been paying for Ray's bookstore, paying the rent. And he was talking about how, you know, Ray was the brains Egon was the brains and Ray was the heart and Peter was Peter kind of thing. And Janine asks Winston, well, then what were you? I love that Winston answered the sex appeal. Such a much better answer than the black one. So I love that I don't know if that was just the line they came up with or if it was a little bit like, oh, maybe you guys are expecting us to say the thing, but we're not going to say the thing. Said he was the sexy one. Cool.
Do you want to dive into that a little bit right now or no?
Which one?
About Ernie Hudson. Like, I feel like this guy got no love in this entire franchise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He did not get appreciated as much as he should have been appreciated. And the fact that his character comes in 1984's movie as just a dude that needs a job. I don't know. That's very cool. I really, really like that. It's not some dude that's like, oh my God, I had this experience and now I'm going to join your team. Like Leslie Jones's character does in 2016, which I don't have a problem with that. I just love that it was completely random. Some random dude that needs a job. It's like fucking steady paycheck. Like you said, I'll believe what you want. But yeah, his character and him were not given the respects that he deserved.
And so one of the other things when the entire cast decided to do the video game, one of Bill Murray's stipulations was that everybody gets equal time. It's not just about him. And so in the video game, you get a lot more interaction with some of the, with Ernie Hudson's character. So it was a lot of fun with that. And I feel like with the 2021, they really kind of gave him a little bit more lines and more to do a little bit. The only question I really have is they say he's a successful businessman. What is it exactly he does?
Well, cause let's see.
Because I don't think they mention it at all.
I don't think so. But he was the one that brought the hearse in the first one. So what other lucrative business other than like weddings, babies, and death?
What do you mean he brought the hearse in the first one?
Wasn't he the one that brought the hearse for in 84? He is the one that
It was Dan Aykroyd that brought it, and it was an ambulance.
Oh.
There was a hearse in 2016, He owned a funeral home or something like that and had a hearse.
Yes, for 2016. But I thought that was also because in the 1984 one, that was a hearse. But I forget that old-ass vehicles like that aren't just what I think they are.
Yeah, it was an ambulance, old-school ambulance or something to that nature. It was a medical, because I think it even had like a Red Cross or something on it. Or at least a faded one or something like that. But I know it was Dan Aykroyd. And I believe it because it already had the sirens and stuff on it. So I assumed it was some sort of ambulance.
Okay. So maybe. All right. So according to Wikipedia, the Ectomobile, known as Ecto One, is a fictional vehicle.
No shit, huh?
Let's see. I just had it. Limo style end loader combination car. Ambulance conversion used in the 84 Ghostbusters. Okay. I don't know why. I guess it just kind of has more of a hearse look to it. I'm looking at the picture, even all done up Ghostbuster style.
No, I agree. It does have that style, but yeah, I think it was an ambulance, or I think Dan Aykroyd even mentions it was like an ambulance at one point.
See, and it's so funny because like I just was watching the original one, but I was not paying attention because whatever.
Well, when you see a movie like that 1,000 times, sometimes, you know, you just kind of phase out and you don't, you know, it happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hell, I've done it. Especially when the wife's talking.
Oh, let's see.
Well, she's at work. I can say whatever I want now.
I was going to say, she's going to be walking in, banging cupboard doors and putting away groceries again.
If we go past 7:30, she might.
Oh Jesus, I hope we don't go past 7:30. Shit.
Well, I knew this was, I figured this is going to be a longer one, so I,
yeah, let's see, where was I? Oh, another thing I liked about 2021 was the score, original score. I don't know if it was just clips, they just took clips from the original movies. You said no. Why?
Sorry. It's the, once I saw that interview with Jason Wright, Reitman, I was just, so when I saw this movie, I've only seen it twice. Once originally, I think it was a year and a half, maybe later that I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And instantly I was kind of pissed off. And so then I watched it again last night, just to get a rewatch. And then I watched a bunch of the extras on the Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when he comes out and sits there and says, this is supposed to be all nostalgia and it wound up being almost a cookie cutter of 84 anyway. I'm like, this isn't, I don't know. It's a, like I said, it's, I think it's more of a cash grab than anything.
So you didn't like the inclusion of kind of the original score in the 2021?
It was just overdone. Everything was overdone.
Man, I disagree. I loved the inclusion of the original score done by Elmer Bernstein. I mean, maybe I am buying into the nostalgia cash grab of it, but I like that because 2016 didn't have that. It had the original theme by Ray Parker Jr. incorporated into it and an updated like remix version of it, cover of it. But for the score, I liked that the original was included in 2021. And it's fine that it wasn't included in 2016. But once I was picking up on that, I loved it because I felt like it kind of, it helped set the tones for some of these scenes, some of the more serious ones, some of the more lighthearted ones, like we see in the original one, like when Bill Murray, when Peter Venkman first approaches Dana outside of, you know, outside of the wherever near the fountain. It's a very lighthearted background music to go along with this kind of lighthearted, almost sweet, yet pushy, semi, you know, soon to be a romantic pairing encounter. So I don't know. I liked it. I think it's funny that the things you didn't care for with 2021 were the things where I was like, yay, I guess I'm their target audience.
Must be
me and a 12-year-old. So
it's, and the only other thing I can say about that is I think part of what this movie, not only nostalgia, but I think, because I believe it wasn't it Sony that did both 2021 and 2016?
I'm not sure, but the messiness tells me that it could very well have been Sony.
So yeah, 2016 is Sony. And then let me just pull this up here quick. Because I think they were both Sony. So I think what wound up happening, yeah. So they were both distributed by Sony. And so I read something, and I should have wrote it down, but now that you mentioned this part, I think what wound up also happening is that because Sony had such bad reviews and such a flop with 2016, they wanted to maybe just, hey, instead of trying to do something new, let's just give the fans a road down nostalgia. And that's pretty much what it was. And like I said, also for this, not to beat a dead horse, we can move on after this. But it, knowing what I know about the history from 89 all the way up until Harold Ramis's death, I think pretty much anything you were going to do after that, unless you really towed the line, you were going to fail on my end. I guess that's all I can say about that.
Sure. Fair enough. Yeah, sometimes I don't like going into movies knowing too much, because I think that absolutely can happen is you find out there's just too much drama, shenanigans, and bullshit, and you're just like, it doesn't make it fun to watch.
I mean, you're watching because it's got the name.
Yeah.
Like, I went into the theater on my birthday watching the remake of RoboCop, already knowing I probably wasn't going to like it. And lo and behold, I wouldn't say I hated it, but I didn't really think it was all that good either. But
all right. So before we move on to the 2016, because yeah, we can stop pooping on this movie. One thing I saw on the IMDb at a Ghostbusters fan fest, Jason Reitman thanked Paul Feige for Ghostbusters 2016, stating, "And Paul, to express gratitude to you for kicking down the door on what a Ghostbuster and who a Ghostbuster could be. Anytime I see a movie where there's a SWAT team, there's that first guy who goes through the door and takes all the damn bullets. And you were the first one through the door, and you were the person who allowed me and many other people to make Ghostbusters movies about people of every race, gender, and people around the world. There are all kinds of Ghostbusters movies that I want to see, and thank you for making that possible." I think that's just really sweet.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll go on to 2016. And anything else you want to say? Any other fun facts behind the scenes, dramatics and whatnot, you've got to ruin this one?
Well, I don't think I have to do a whole lot to ruin it. Like I've already gone through the, like I said, I've already gone through the history of the 89 all the way to Harold Ramis's death. And then, you know, the fact that it comes out, what is it, 2 years? Didn't he die in 2014?
Yep.
And so to have this come out, which I happen to think pretty fast, kind of just, I was already sullied going in. What format did you watch this on, the 2016?
Let's see. I had to rent it on Vudu because I wasn't going to get the DVD in time. So whatever 4K, HDX, whatever the fuck it was on Vudu.
Did you happen to have any sort of black bars at the top or bottom or maybe even on the sides?
I don't think so. I think it was, for the most part, like a full screen, widescreen, not like how the last movie we did.
Dread,
yeah, where it was just, yeah, the borders around the smaller picture screen. So, no, I didn't pick up on any of that.
So, the reason I asked that is because I had it on Blu-ray, and for some reason, and I don't know if this was by design, it had to have been, but there was a little bit of black up and on the top and the bottom. But as they were fighting the ghosts, you could see the proton go through that black, but nothing else was there. It was in some other effects. Mm-hmm. Like if there was slime, like the slime would show up in that outside area, but nothing else was.
Huh.
It was just really weird.
That is weird. I wonder.
I didn't know if you
that.
Had that same thing or not, but I thought I thought it was kind of cool. It was different.
Yeah.
Kind of annoying at times, but it was just, I just noticed it. Like all of a sudden there's this proton beam coming up through the bottom of the screen where it's black. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't very big. I mean, well, I got a big TV, so it stood out a little more. But, but yeah, that happened. So,
So I'm wondering, because I thought I saw something about either one of the newer ones or both of them in 3D. So I wonder if maybe that's why you were seeing some weird stuff.
Well, maybe.
Because I've got an article from Vulture from July 20th, 2016 that says why Ghostbusters looks so unusual in 3D. And they are talking about the 2016 one. So,
No, maybe.
Maybe. Like I said, I don't think this movie deserves as much hate as it does. I mean, if you cannot like it for your reasons because of knowing the backstory and everything, like that's fine. But I feel like this movie gets shit on for misogynistic and racist reasons. The fact that Leslie Jones has been a target because of this movie. And I think just any damn time she appears in anything, the internet seems to, I think there's a loud minority out there that comes for her and then also came for this movie. The fact that it had garnered like the most dislikes on YouTube for a trailer is incredibly upsetting, and it's so fucked up, and it's wrong, and it's mean, and it's not nice. I understand people have a hard time with major changes to anything that they hold dear, but they have to remember that they do not fucking own that shit. And if they want to remake a Ghostbusters with an all-woman cast to, one, show that anyone can be a Ghostbuster, and two, kind of give that woman solidarity, because all these women like uplift each other. They're there for each other. They're supportive of each other. And that's always nice to see women coming together like that and not being petty and cutting each other down. So you've got this like girl power vibe to it. You've got, little girls across the country or across the world or whatever that are like, that can literally see themselves as a Ghostbuster. You know, not a, I'm a girl one. I'm just a Ghostbuster. So I give it all the props and respects for that. There are some things about it that just didn't hit right, and that's fine. But I think, like I keep saying, this movie just gets too much unjustified hate.
Is there a reason why people are targeting Leslie Jones in particular? Like, did she say something or do something that?
No, just racism. Hmm.
That's just too bad. Because I thought, other than, I mean, let's face it, Chris Hemsworth stole a show in this movie.
Oh God, he was so funny. I watched the extended cut, so I think his like little dance bit was cut from the theatrical, because I had read that Paul Feige said that was one of the hardest parts to cut from the movie to fit the runtime, and it's so random, but it's so funny. So I don't know if you saw that.
It was in the credits, I believe.
Yes. So they show it over the credits, but in the extended cut, there's a whole like kind of scene with it getting all the everyone doing the dancing. So,
because I was going to say, I mean, obviously Chris Hemsworth just stole a show in that movie, but after him, I thought Leslie Jones was the second best thing in that movie.
She was hilarious. And I had read that originally her part had Melissa McCarthy in mind, but Paul Feige, since he had directed Bridesmaids, was like, Melissa's already done a character like that. So he wanted Leslie Jones, and he said he wanted to kind of unleash Leslie onto the world like he did with Melissa through Bridesmaids. And I don't know if you've seen that movie, but her character's off the wall. I love it. So I really enjoyed Leslie. I could almost see Melissa McCarthy playing that same character, the Patty character. But one of my favorite scenes is with those two, and they're talking about Phil, whoever, one of Annie's coworkers. We see him quickly in the beginning, and then he avoids her when she's being fired. But they're making fun of him, and they're talking about trying to think about how he dances. And then Melissa McCarthy starts doing like this very, she's like, I think it's very rigid and stiff and a lot of teeth. And the way that those two are just going back and forth, I'm like, how much of that was ad-libbed? Because that, it was way too funny. And there's a couple of times where I'm looking at Leslie and I'm like, I don't think that's a character laugh. I think that's an actor laughing. But she made it work. Yeah, she was great. I know that there are some criticisms about her character kind of fulfilling more of like that stereotype of a Black character in a movie. I could see that, but not being a Black person, I'm not going to comment anymore on that. So if people felt that way, then their feelings are valid.
Yep.
I'm not gonna argue that.
But otherwise, the rest of the cast, I'm not a fan of Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, or even Kate McKinnon. Maybe I just haven't seen enough. I am a kind of an old fuddy-duddy, so if you're anything past the year 2000, I'm kind of already disinterested anyway. So,
and I like Melissa McCarthy, and I was introduced to her through Gilmore Girls, so I've been able to kind of follow her movie career a little bit since I've knew her pre her these starring roles. As for Kristen Wiig and Kate McKenna, because I never really watched Saturday Night Live past like 2000, you know, pretty
thank
much
you
Will Ferrell. But the little clips and stuff that I've seen, it's almost like the best ofs. And so those are funny and I've enjoyed those, but that's the only context in which I know truly their comedy. I've seen Kristen Wiig in movies like Bridesmaids. I do think she's really funny. I think she's, like I said, from what I've seen, I have liked.
And then what did you think of the story overall in and of itself?
I did not.
You didn't care for it?
No, because what? It's like this whiny little man child all like, I'm going to unleash all the spirits because I don't know what. People are mean to him. I didn't care for that. Rowan or whatever. So I apologize if I missed that there was a bigger, deeper meaning with that character and why he wanted to unleash hell on Manhattan. But
See, I thought it was different. They tried something new, and I mean, I don't think it's the greatest story ever told by any means, but I feel like for how bad it could have actually been, we got off pretty well on the story, I think.
Well, I would agree. And it's, yeah, I didn't hate it. It towards the end of the movie, I realized I'm here for the jokes. I'm here for the little bits of nostalgia, seeing the proton packs, you know, girl power, all of that. And when I was thinking about like the overall plot, I'm just kind of like, it's whatever. It's fine.
And you said you didn't care for the effects as much?
No.
See, I thought it was a little more colorful and vibrant. That kind of made it a little cooler to see.
I will agree with that. I like the color tones, you know, the sequence towards the end with Kate McKenna and her proton blasters and that kind of whole fight sequence. I enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. It was really cool to see with the smoke and, yeah, the color schemes. But more to do with, I think, like the big ghosty Rowan, where he's, I don't know. There's just some I was just like, eh. But I mean, it's a movie that's going to have, that has ghosts and demons getting busted. So you're going to have special effects that not everyone's going to love.
Yeah. I don't have, I guess, a whole lot more for 2016, unless you have a talking point or something you want to get out.
Let's see. I'm just kind of looking through my notes. I laughed really hard at the concept of the proton glove, that they would actually be going like fisticuffs with ghosts. So when they introduced that, I could not stop laughing, because then I was like, they're going to fight. Someone's boxing a ghost, and that's going to be ridiculous. Let's see. I felt like there were a few scenes that felt kind of reminiscent of other movies. Melissa McCarthy, after she gets slimed and she's, all the slime or whatever is coming out of her. I have another scene where she can't keep fluids in her body in a bathroom, because that happens in Bridesmaids. She's crapping in a sink. Don't look at me. And then Aaron running into the restaurant to the mayor reminds me of in Ghostbusters 2, after the other guys find the slime under the city, they bust in on Peter and Dana's date at a fancy restaurant. And then the mayor has a line that's, so because one of them called them the mayor from Jaws, and he got really offended. He's like, don't you ever compare me to the mayor in Jaws.
That was pretty funny.
All right, let's see. And of course, you got the classic time to cross the streams and everything. So, and then we get Slimer and Lady Slimer, which was weird, but all right, whatever.
Well, then they got that Die Hard 2 reference in there that nobody seems to remember.
No.
This is what I'm talking about. So you remember when Slimer and his girlfriend are driving around town in the Ecto, I think it's still Ecto-1 at that point. Mm-hmm. And so it goes, they use the nuclear what a crap on top. And so it crashes in, and so Slimer and his girlfriend fly up from the seats.
Yeah,
Die Hard 2.
All right.
But instead of screaming on the way down, they're laughing and just having a good time with it.
That's good.
So I wonder if that's not part of something else as well too. Like there's something we miss, like maybe obviously, it's not a Rennie Harlan movie, so it's not like he's trying to make fun of himself. But somebody had to have worked with somebody on Die Hard 2 and be like, screw it, we're doing this.
I mean, who knows? There could just been a fan. Yeah. No, that's fun. Thanks for pointing that out. I did not catch that. And then obviously, as you're talking about it, I was like, oh my God. Duh.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks.
That's why you bring me on for the one thing I can help out with.
That's right.
Well, I'm done for the day. Screw it.
All right. Bye. All right. Let's see. So I think that's pretty much going to do. Let me just double check. There is a bust of Harold Ramis that is seen outside of Abby's lab near the beginning of the movie. So that was really sweet. And then some joke about Columbia University. Oh, Abby says, unlike Columbia, this institute is 100% behind us. This is a reference to Ghostbusters 84, where Columbia University allowed its facilities to be used for filming as long as its name was never mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, yeah, I think that's, yeah, we'll stop there for 2016. So, all right. Anything else you got for 89 or 84?
Well, so all I really have for 89, since we're going backwards, mm-hmm. in Ghostbusters 2, is how did you care for the whole main story that people are dicks in New York?
So
tread carefully.
Yeah, I like that they really kind of leaned into the whole like stereotype of New Yorkers being mean and rude and everything. And because it gets to such a literal toxic level, this evil, this sludge that feeds off negative energy, is there, and it's allowed Viggo to gain strength and whatnot. And the way to combat that is positively charged goo. That, you know, you play a little song and you do a dance in it, and then you spray the inside of the Statue of Liberty. That shit is fucking goofballs as hell. But they did the whole, like, I love New York idea, mentality or whatever, theme, better than post 9/11 Spider-Man, where they added the line, you mess with Spider-Man, you mess with New York. Like, that was clearly reshot and edited in post 9/11. And it just takes you out of the moment, takes you out of the movie. Whereas at least in 89, they're already, I mean, it's all right there in the very beginning. Everyone's being mean. Dana's walking the baby and everyone's griping at each other. You see it. That's what Egon's working on. So they kind of lean into that stereotype, but then also show that New Yorkers aren't so bad.
Well, the only thing I would say about that is clearly 89 was way ahead of itself, because they were able to figure out what was going to happen 20 years later, because we already now have a filthy sludge that feeds off of negative energy. We just call it the GOP. Come on, I had to.
Zingers! Come on.
I do not endorse either party, so I'm just going to let you know that. So I don't think the left is all that much better either. So.
Oh, can I just... As someone that is on the left, I will admit that it is hard and embarrassing sometimes, because, like, we don't get shit done.
Oh.
And we're just, it's fucking frustrating. Anyway, that's my own little bit there. So.
Yeah, we're done with politics. We're not doing anything. Yep, we're done with that. Okay. Well, until we get to 84, because then we talk about how big a dick the mayor was.
All right. Yeah.
And just remember, almost half the Ghostbusters voted to reelect the mayor in 89.
Yeah. So we really got to pay attention to who and what we're voting for.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. For 89, since I didn't get a full rewatch in, and it's not obviously, it's out of the two original, like, it's fine. Like I said, I didn't like the direction, the change in Janine. I also didn't really like the change in Lewis, because I felt like they made him more of kind of like a doofus.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, he was awkward, but in the first one, but he wasn't a different kind of, like, a sweet doofus. I don't know, but I didn't care for those changes. Never really cared for those changes, even as a kid, but they are what they are.
Well, and that was one of the things that, even though the critics didn't necessarily care for the second one, Rick Moranis and Peter McNichol, they were both hugely praised by the critics for their comedic portrayal in the movie. So, I don't know. I thought Peter McNichol was, I don't know, it was just a little too over the top for me a little bit.
With that accent and everything.
Yeah.
I do enjoy him. He's very kind of like, he's a fun character to cringe at, right? Mm-hmm. To be cringy about, because he's so fucking weird.
Well, he's that guy in The Office.
Yes.
I mean, not the show, but like your actual workplace. Like, he is that guy that you're like, oh, he's not a bad guy, but I don't really want to talk to him.
Yeah. It's like, I don't want to be alone in the room with him, in a room with him. So.
Just remember, everything you're doing is bad. I want you to know that.
Yeah.
I thought that was hilarious. I'd be like, I just want to do that to somebody.
I did. I have always liked that line, and just like the bluntness of it. Some of my other favorite lines, I think maybe my favorite in this one, is during the courtroom scene, and the judge is like, you know, the ghosts have been unleashed, and the judge is like, all right, fine, charges dismissed, and this and that, and they put on the protox. And they fire him up, and Peter goes, do. Ray goes, Ray. Egon goes, Egon. And he's so proud of himself.
Yeah.
I, like, that was the last thing I saw before I came down to the pod basement. And it just had me cackling. It just, his delivery. Harold Ramis was always great as that kind of straight man role in his movies of the 80s and 90s. And he's just got like some of the best fucking delivery and timing. So that was always just a favorite film. Yeah, I think that's kind of it for 89. Not a whole hell of a lot. It's fine as a sequel.
Yeah.
All right. And then ending on 1984 Ghostbusters. We came, we saw, we kicked its ass. Loved it. So what do you think about the whole, like, the EPA being kind of the baddie in the movie? Granted, the dude is a dick, but, like, they're just worried about the environment. Why is that a bad thing?
Well, anything government related, I don't put a whole lot of stock into. I'm just going to put it that way.
Fair enough. And maybe that's what they were really going for, was kind of just government being the bad guys.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I could see doing it. When did you first see 84?
I have no idea. It's just, it's just always been there. It's been a core memory for as long as I can remember.
How old would you say you maybe were? Just,
I would guess maybe like seven. Maybe six, seven. Cause yeah, it came out in 84. So I was three. So I'm not going to the theaters to see it. It's going to take at least a year for it to get onto TV, whether that's cable. And then, well, I don't think cable will exist. I don't know.
It might have.
Yeah, it might have by then. But yeah, cause I just remember seeing it. Cause yeah, we had cable, we had HBO and Cinemax. And it felt like those were two movies that were like always on one of those two channels. So.
The reason I ask those questions is because, having seen it as often as I have throughout the years, I don't ever think I totally understood what was going on when I was younger, as far as the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, with every rewatch, I kind of pick up on, oh, I missed that. And oh, that was a funny little joke I missed when I was younger. And so did you kind of have that, throughout your years of rewatching this one, that
oh yeah, the main one being the ghosty mouthy that Ray gets during the like montage after they've kind of business is picking up and everything, yeah. So they're sleeping. I never understood what was happening there, and I obviously never got like the truth from like my folks or anything, so. It took a while before I was like, that's what's going on.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's other jokes and references kind of sprinkled throughout that I didn't initially get. Nothing really popped out at me this morning during my rewatch as, oh, that's what that was.
Well, when was the last time you seen it before? Yeah, this morning.
God, it's a while. Several years.
Okay.
So.
Because I was just, it kind of dawned on me that it was, I don't think I ever caught when I was younger a lot of the dialogue as far as the comedic value. I just, as a kid, I always just thought it was cool. The movie was cool. There's Ghostbusters. The effects were, even today, are still, they hold up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, after, what is it now, 40 some years? Yeah, 9-0, right?
I cry because I'm older than it, so. Yeah, let's see. Like, there was some of the more obvious jokes that I always got. Like, when they're trying to catch Slimer in the hotel, and Ray gets ready to open the trap, and he tells them not to look in the trap, and then Egon, staring at the trap, is all, I looked in the trap, Ray! Mm-hmm. So a lot more of the obvious stuff, but yeah, not a lot within the dialogue, other than when Bill Murray calls EPA guy, where he's like, no, it's true, this man has no dick, because I think Ray calls him a dickless something. That's funny. Nothing new, nothing standouty.
And then, because you were so young, did you ever get scared of any of the effects or anything like that?
I'm trying to think.
Uh-oh.
Of the scariest, huh?
What? I lost you.
Uh-oh.
Hello?
There you are.
Oh, what happened there?
You're back. I don't know. You froze, though.
So did you.
So.
Your hair was all up.
Yeah. Yeah. Internet connection unstable. So that's fun. Dumb. What were we talking about? We're still on 84. What now?
Were you ever scared of any of the effects or any of the scenes like that?
Not. I mean, I'm sure I was. I'm sure there were scenes and moments that got me when I was a kid. Maybe the demon dogs, because those were pretty scary. Not real. I don't think so. No, the library ghost. Duh, the library ghost scared the shit out of me for an opening sequence, and the way that library ghost just comes at that lady. Yeah, that's no bueno. But very, very good. I love it now. Maybe that's why I avoided libraries for so long. Just kidding.
Yeah, that's the reason.
Yeah. Let's see. I did see on IMDb that when Louis Tully mingles with his party guests, commenting on the price of salmon and so on, the scene is one continuous shot and almost entirely improvised.
Oh, I knew it was one continuous shot. I didn't realize it was improvised. Oh, that's kind of cool.
I love it. That's fucking hell yeah. Let's see. Because, yeah, in terms of, like, scenes that really stood out and scared the shit out of me, nothing that I can really pinpoint with the first one other than the library ghost. But with the second one, it was always the ghost train and the head on pikes. Like, that shit almost traumatized me.
And so while, granted, the story was really good for both, well, maybe not so much the second one. I still have mixed feelings about that. But one of, like we talked about in the last podcast about Judge Dredd, you don't get to see them busting a whole lot of ghosts in either one for that matter. I mean, you get the great one at the, what is it, Cedric Hotel in the first one. And yep. Then I don't think they really do any in the second one, do they? Oh, just the Scoleri brothers.
Yeah, yep.
Otherwise, it's like a montage of them doing stuff, but not busting ghosts. I wish there was a little bit more of that involved with both of them.
And I will say for 2016, they did seem like the proton packs did see more action. I think we saw more ghost busting in 2016 than these two. Because even watching the first one again, I was like, yeah, we really aren't seeing them. Like during that montage, it's just them with the traps all smoking and finishing up catching the ghost, but not the actual catching of the ghosts.
I mean, I know we can't go into the, I mean, I guess I don't know how long that whole sequence was with the Scoleri brothers and two, and then Slimer in the first one. Like those are some, I mean, that's a pretty big chunk of time to be divulging to maybe one or two ghosts to bust. So I get that, but you know, that's kind of the premise of the movie. And then just to kind of poo-poo it all away with a montage only to set it up as they're just going to get released in the first one anyway. So I don't know. That's one of those things to me where I'd like to see a little bit more of that.
Sure. That makes sense. I just kind of chalked it up to just not the money, you know, money wasn't there and the effects weren't there. And so why?
Well, I don't know about that. I thought the effects for both one and two were still hold up today.
Right. But I just mean that like, to in the original run of it, to have originally included more actual ghost busting scenes would have eaten into their effects budget, and then the gozer bit and everything probably might not have looked as good. So that's as logical of an explanation as I've got for that.
And I think, wasn't it in the 2021, barring the first or second capturing of one of the gatekeepers or keymasters, they only bust one ghost as well in the 2020, which is just that muncher.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they go up against the big bad. Yeah. They didn't really do a lot of additional ghost busting in 2021. So I guess it is still very much an homage to the first one.
Cookie cutter, goddammit. That's all I got to say, cookie cutter.
Oh, man. I mean, yeah, you're not entirely wrong. So All right. Let's see. I think that's about does it for me. I just thought of something else I wanted to mention, but I lost it, so I'm not going to worry too much about it. So,
well, the thing is, I kind of feared going into this because, like, 84 and 89, and these are some big time movies. I mean, there's not a whole lot we can say that'll add to the conversation about them. Obviously, 2016, I think we've added a little bit more to it because we're not two of those people that absolutely hate it, but we don't think it's great either.
Right. And the criticisms that we do have, I feel like, are valid film criticisms and not just like, you ruined my childhood by casting ladies.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, let's see. Since this is a bit of a franchise, which is your favorite out of these four? It's 2021, isn't it? You loved that one. That's your favorite Ghostbuster movie ever.
I'm sorry, you froze there. I couldn't hear what you were saying.
Oh, I'm going through a tunnel. Oh no. Not
Absolutely not. And how we did this. So we did 2021 first and then went backwards.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be just the exact opposite for me. My favorite's going to be 84, 89. I don't know. I may have to put 2021 above 2016, but I'm not sold on it.
And I didn't include 2021 as part of our rank our remakes because I see it as a sequel to the first two. The first one for sure. I still don't know how much they're acknowledging the second one. I because of that, because it's a family thing, it's his granddaughter, his daughter and his granddaughter. I don't see this being falling into the category for us to rank or say which one it is.
I think it's dancing on that line really, really thin.
See, and I think 2016 dances a line. Let's see, what did I...
Well, that's just a reimagining.
See, and I feel like it could also fall under a reboot in the sense that we have the first two movies. So with the definitions that we've been working with, reboot resets the continuity of a film series.
Is two considered a series?
Sure, I don't know. Why not? Does it need to be more than... Now we need to define series.
I don't know. Well, okay. I would give you that there's three if you include the video game. And I will because if you're bored for, I think it's like an hour, hour and a half, pull up the video game cutscenes and you can watch it. It's only like an hour, hour and a half. You could watch it. It plays pretty close to the one and two.
Okay.
And it's actually kind of funny too. I mean, so I kind of want to throw 2021 into the conversation of a reboot of some sort, but I could see why you wouldn't necessarily, but I feel like that's a really fine line though. So I'm fine with either one.
Okay.
Either having it or not.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I don't know that I can. Well, I feel like if I absolutely had to, if you put a proton glove to my head, I would.
Oh, mine's broke.
I guess I would put 2021 as a reboot. It's not necessarily resetting the continuity of the other two, but I feel like they're kind of making up enough of a backstory to Egon. Because when you take in the timeline and how old his daughter is, she was alive in 84, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like, if I had to, I'm going to say that's a reboot.
And even you could even go a step further and argue for it that it's also just even a remake, because let's face it, almost all the, all the characters, at least the baddies in that aspect, are all still there. So they didn't really try to do anything different on that aspect.
True.
And plus, it's a different cast of Ghostbusters for the most part, up until the last, what is it, 5-10 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
So you could theoretically still call that a remake as well, too, just
you
with
could.
Those parameters.
Yeah, it definitely, yeah, like you said, toes that fine line. So, well, are you ready to rank the remakes?
Let me pull out my sheet here.
I'm getting there. I need to look at my Judge Dredd notes because where did I rank them?
Yeah, I kind of forgot where I put that as well, too. Oh, okay, so last time when we did Dredd, though, I was ranking Judge Dredd, not Dredd. So I have to change mine on that. I thought about that because I was like, I hated that Sylvester Stallone. And I was like, wait a minute, that's not the one I'm supposed to be ranking after it was done. So,
no, but I did like, I did really like how you included the comic, the comics of Judge Dredd in your decision of what they are and where they rank. So,
so I know we got Nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Friday the 13th, we did Little Shop. What was after that?
Let's see. So we've got,
or whatever list you've got.
All right. So we've got Nightmare, Friday, RoboCop, Little Shop, Evil Dead. And then
Evil Dead. Okay.
And then both Black Christmases, 2006 and 2019, your total faves.
Okay.
And then The Thing, 2011.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think we didn't count 80 John Carpenter's as a remake, but we did talk about all three movies.
Correct.
I wonder what the reason was behind that.
Well, it was because
I decided that.
Well, it was because of the fact that the John Carpenter version was almost like a sequel to the original. It wasn't necessarily a remake as opposed to, what was it, the 2011 you said it was?
Yeah.
The 2011 had all the same elements, like the finding of the alien and all that stuff. So the 2011 would have been the remake of the 54, was it?
I can't remember. Yeah, the old black and white one.
So that's why we did it that way.
Okay. I was like, why?
What else are we missing?
Judge
Dredd.
And Total Recall.
Ah, there we go. Dredd and Recall. So I've got 10 movies. Oh, I don't have the Ghostbusters ones down yet, but I think that's it, though.
Yeah, there should just be the 10, not counting these two Ghostbusters.
All right, I think I'm good to go. You want to start?
All right, so I'm going to start from the shit and work my way to the good. So, as per usual, these kind of bottom handful can swap around on any given day, depending on my mood. But for today, we've got Nightmare at 12, Black Christmas 2019 at 11, Friday at 10, RoboCop at 9, Total Recall at 8, Dredd 7, Ghostbusters 2021 at 6, Ghostbusters 2016 5, Thing 2011 at 4, Black Christmas 06 at 3, and then Evil Dead and Little Shop. I rewatched the Evil Dead remake the other day just for shits and giggles because I was like, it has been a while. Fuck, that is so... I swear it gets better every time. And it's like all those like insane bits of like chopping appendages and everything. Like, oh, it still gets me. It's so fucking good. I think I like it a little more every time I watch it.
Did you see the new one or not?
Oh, not yet. Evil Dead Rise. I've heard good things. So
yeah, so have I.
All right. Are you ready to rank your remakes?
Yeah. I'm going to go in the opposite order. I'm going to go for my favorites. Obviously, Little Shop, Evil Dead, number two. And I cheated again where I lumped a bunch into three.
Kind of easy to do.
Well, like I said, these are movies that if I was bored some night and just wanted to watch a movie, if I picked any of these, I'd be fine with watching them. And that would be no particular order, though. RoboCop, Black Christmas 2006, The Thing 2011, Dread, and Total Recall. Those I could be fine with watching any of them at any given time, which then takes me all the way down to number 8. And we have a tie at 8 as well, too, being both the 2016 and 2021 Ghostbusters.
Fair enough.
They're also tied with Friday the 13th.
Okay.
I know. And then once we get through those three, I've got Nightmare at 11, and then How Dare You Call Yourself Black Christmas 2019.
I love
Which should be its official title, thanks to you.
I love how much you hate that movie. I really love it. It made me so fucking angry too. I agree. Yeah, that's its new title. How Dare You Call Yourself Black Christmas.
That should be the official title. We should go into Wiki and change it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that will lead us straight into our Midwest goodbye. And we'll start with the 6 degrees of Nicolas Cage. So were you able to get one done with one or with either any of these movies?
No. When you texted me with the link, I was just finishing up all my research. And I was like, I don't have time.
Okay.
So I dropped the ball on that one.
That's all right. This one time. I suppose.
Thanks.
So I will start with, we'll start with Afterlife and work my way down to the originals. So in Afterlife, it stars.
Did you do all four?
I did.
Oh.
So that's fine. You didn't do one. I've got plenty to make up for it. So. All right. So Afterlife stars Carrie Coon. She was in Gone Girl with Ben Affleck, who was in 200 Cigarettes with Dave Chappelle, who was in Con Air. 2016 has Zach Woods as Garrett, that opening tour guide, who is fucking hilarious. That guy is so funny, and I was really thrilled when he kind of popped up in this random role, because I think he's really funny, and I think he needs more roles and needs more credit. But Zach Woods, he did a voice in the Lego Ninjago movie. That also had Fred Armisen doing voiceover work, who is in Anchorman with Danny Trejo, who is in Book of Boba Fett with Pedro Pascal, who is in Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent with Nicolas Cage. I have two for Ghostbusters 2, because the second one this first one I just kind of happened upon. Kurt Fuller is in Ghostbusters 2, and he was also in Frozen Ground with Nicolas Cage. Ghostbusters 2, Ernie Hudson, who was in Angie Tribeca, which is a really funny show. I don't think it's still on, but it's available on streaming. You should check it out. It was a TBS. But he was in Angie Tribeca with Bobby Cannavale, who was in Mr. Robot with Christian Slater, who was in Broken Arrow with John Travolta, who was Nicolas Cage in Con Air. And then, in honor of Harold Ramis, for Ghostbusters 1... Harold Ramis was in Airheads with Steve Buscemi, who was in Con Air. That was a quick
answer. Oh, there you go.
All right. And now on to what's been streaming in your bubble. And I know, Dozer, last time we chatted, you didn't have a lot of time to watch anything. Has you had a chance to get caught up or watch The Boys finally? Like I've been fucking telling you for the last cartoon.
Season 1.
Yeah?
I did get through season 1.
What'd you think?
It's not bad. It's entertaining enough that I'm gonna continue on with season 2.
All right.
I am gonna continue on with that. Other than that, no, I haven't been watching a whole lot right now. I rewatched the Hatchet series just for shits and giggles because it's one of my all time favorite series as far as horror goes. So
nice.
What about you?
Hubby and I just finished The Bear on Hulu. Other than that, I'm just looking forward to some new seasons of shows that are going to be dropping here in the next, from today's date, in a couple of days. So by the time this comes out, they will have been out and I will hopefully have watched a fair number of it. But Black Mirror season 6 comes out on June 15th on Netflix. And then Star Trek Strange New World season 2 also comes out on June 15th. And I do have to say that they need to stop releasing new seasons of shows that I watch with my husband in the summertime, because we won't get to it until the fall. And I don't know that I can handle that.
The struggle is real.
It is. It is. That's my biggest problem. So I guess things are fine. But yeah, that's pretty much it. All right. Well, Dozer, thank you so much for joining me today and talking about these four movies, some more beloved than others. And we'll have to figure out what we're going to poop on next.
I've got another one I would like to do. I've been holding on to this series here for a while, and I would like to just get through it. I just don't know how good of an actual podcast it'll be, but give it a shot anyways.
Oh, boy. I did finally watch for the first time from beginning to end Halloween 1978. So I might be ready to do the Halloweens, maybe by Halloween. I don't know. I really don't want to watch the Rob Zombie ones, though. He needs to stop making movies.
Well, him and Michael Bay, but you know, what are you going to do?
So, well, until we figure out the next movie or series or whatever we're going to judge and crap on. Again, thank you, Dozer, for joining me today. And thank you to all my lovely bubblies for listening. And keep streaming. Bye.
Bye.
If you're enjoying this podcast, be sure to let me know by rating and reviewing wherever you get your podcast fix. Follow me on Twitter at Streaming Bubble. Find me on Facebook and Instagram as My Streaming Bubble. Have thoughts, suggestions, questions, or want to be tolerated? Email me at mystreamingbubble@gmail.com. If you want to show your love and support for this little old podcast in monetary form, search My Streaming Bubble over at buymeacoffee.com and buy me a cheese wedge. And if you want to take that love and support to the next level, head over to Redbubble, where you can find and purchase My Streaming Bubble merch. All monetary support goes right back into this podcast, from new recording equipment to night cheese. Thanks for your support, and keep streaming.